Welcome to episode 1487 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. In the previous episode, Salome turned from the son she had lost to the son who remained. She described John not first as an apostle or writer, but as the boy she had always known, someone who listened differently. Salome also returned to the moment that perhaps shaped John more than any other. After fleeing with the other disciples, he came back to the cross. There, Jesus entrusted Mary to him, and John spent the years that followed caring for the woman who had known Jesus longer than anyone else. Then came another defining loss, the martyrdom of James. Salome expected her younger son to diminish without the brother who had been beside him all his life. Instead, he expanded. The son of thunder, who had once wanted fire from heaven, gradually became the man who would write more profoundly about love than anyone else in the New Testament. But what did decades of listening, remembering, grieving, and believing finally produce? Acts of the Apostles, Part 6, Chapter 7.
When I first read the opening of my son's gospel, I had to sit down. Not from weakness, from recognition. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Matthew begins with a genealogy, the long list of fathers and sons going back to Abraham, the careful establishing of lineage and claim. Mark begins with John the Baptist in the wilderness, urgent and immediate, no time for preamble. Luke begins with careful research and orderly account, the historian finding his sources. And John begins before the beginning, before Abraham, before the genealogy, before the wilderness and the herald, before creation itself. John begins where John always began, not with the surface of things, but with what was underneath the surface, not with the event, but with the meaning the event was carrying before it happened. I recognized that immediately. That was my son.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God.
John was there for things the other Gospels do not record, or he heard about them from people who were there, which in John's case amounts to nearly the same thing. John did not include things unless he understood them, and he did not understand things without sitting with them long enough to see what they were made of. He includes the wedding at Cana. The other Gospels do not, and I noticed this particularly because I was at Cana. And what John captures about it is not primarily the miracle. It is the exchange between Jesus and his mother before the miracle. She says, "They have no wine." He says, "What does this have to do with me? My hour has not yet come." She turns to the servants and says, "Do whatever he tells you." John understood what was happening in that exchange. The hour. That word appears again and again in his gospel, always meaning the same thing, always pointing toward the cross and the resurrection, the moment for which everything else was preparation. Even at a wedding in Cana, Jesus is aware of his hour. Even at the beginning, he is moving toward the end. John saw this because John held the whole arc at once, the way a musician holds a long piece of music in their mind while playing any single note of it. He includes Nicodemus coming to Jesus at night, the Samaritan woman at the well, Lazarus, which Peter has already told you about, but John's account carries something different, not the miracle primarily, but the conversations around it, what Jesus said to Martha, what Martha said back, the tears. John is always most interested in the conversations, because conversation is where what a person actually believes becomes visible. He includes the foot washing. Only he records that. I have thought about why, and I think the answer is for John, the foot washing was the interpretive key to everything else. If you understand why Jesus washed feet, what it meant about who he was and how power worked in his kingdom, then you understand everything he said and did. The other Gospels show you the kingdom. John shows you its logic. The word that appears more in John's writings than in any other part of the New Testament is love. This is not sentiment. I want to say that clearly, because John's reputation for gentleness has sometimes led people to read the love as softness, as if John were the tender apostle counterbalancing Peter's bluntness and Paul's severity. That is not what the love in John's writing is. It is not the love of someone who has decided that everything is fine. It is the love of someone who has looked directly at the cross and the empty tomb and the whole catastrophic and glorious sweep of what happened and concluded that what was at the centre of it all was not power or law or judgment but love, and that this conclusion changes everything about how you live. My son wrote, God so loved the world that he gave his only son. He wrote, love one another as I have loved you. He wrote, there is no fear in love, for perfect love drives out fear. He wrote, God is love, and whoever lives in love lives in God.
Woman, behold your son. John, behold your mother.
He wrote these things as a man who had stood at the foot of the cross, a man who had held Mary through the worst afternoon of 2,000 years, a man who had run to an empty tomb and, according to his own account, had seen and believed. He was not writing from a comfortable distance about a pleasant idea. He was writing from the inside of an experience that had cost everything and given back more. I raised a son of thunder, and the thunder became this. I do not take credit for it. The credit belongs to what was done to him, but I watched it happen, and I can tell you, it was not a diminishment. It was the fire finding its true nature at last, not extinguished, transformed. I have been asked whether I recognize my son in the gospel, whether the person writing it is the person I raised. The answer is, entirely. The boy who went quiet when a question had real weight in it. He is the man who waited until he understood what the weight was before he set a single word down. The boy who looked at the middle distance and then said the one thing that showed the conversation had been missing something essential. He is the writer who began before the beginning, because that was where the essential thing was. The boy who sat beside the lake when he should have been working, looking at the water, as if it owed him an explanation. He is the theologian who wrote that the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. I knew him before he knew himself. That is the particular privilege of a mother, and it is also the particular grief, because watching your child become fully himself is one of the great joys of a life, and by the time it happens, you are old enough to know you will not be there for all of it. I will not be there for all of it. John is already speaking of going somewhere I cannot follow, not death, not yet, but a distance that is opening between us as he goes further into what he has become. He is already half in the world the gospel is describing, and that world is larger than Galilee, larger than Jerusalem, larger than the life we shared. But I will say this, there is a verse near the end of his gospel that I believe was written for me, even though I am not mentioned in it. After the resurrection, after all of it, Jesus speaks to Peter about what is coming, about the kind of death Peter will die, about following. And Peter, being Peter, immediately points to John and asks, what about him? And Jesus says, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. John included that exchange. He knew people would read it and wonder what it meant. He wrote it down anyway, this hint that he might remain a very long time, carrying what he had seen and heard until the end of the age. I am his mother. I read it and I thought, of course he will remain. He is the one who waited longest and held things most carefully. If anyone is to carry it to the end, it is him. That is my John. That is what he became.
There is something deeply hopeful in Salome recognizing the child she raised in the man God had formed. Grace had changed John profoundly, but it had not erased him. The boy who lingered over questions became the apostle who lingered over mysteries. His intensity remained, but its object changed. The thunder became testimony, and the desire to call down fire became an insistence that those who know God must love one another. God's work in us often looks like this. He takes qualities that may initially be immature, misdirected, or incomplete, and patiently brings them toward their intended purpose. The same passion can condemn or defend. The same courage can dominate or serve. The same sensitivity can turn inward or become compassion. Following Jesus is not merely learning better behavior. It is allowing him to reach deeply enough into who we are that even our strongest qualities begin to reflect who he is. John's long life also reminds us that some truths cannot be hurried. He carried memories of Cana, the supper, the cross, the empty tomb, Mary, James, and countless conversations with Jesus for years before giving them their final form. We do not always understand immediately what God is doing through the experiences he gives us. Sometimes faithfulness means remaining, listening, and allowing the meaning to deepen. The light may have been shining all along, even when it takes us years to find the words for what we have seen. To be continued.